Hello, I'm
Danwell R. Sturgeon.
And you might know me on some Christopher Mim pictures as Cavewoman on Mars, Terra from Beneath the Earth, Attack of the Moon Zombies.
Whatever else you were in.
All the other things. But you may not know that I'm also a bad haiku writer.
What?
Truth.
Are you going to read us one of your haikus?
I hope so.
I am.
Sweet.
This haiku goes like this. Doug is a fine man. Ask him if he is dating. Doug will just shrug. Doug.
Indeed.
You're about to enter into a world where all those classic movie monsters are still alive. A time when scary movies were fun for the whole family. And a place where the only colors you'll find are black, white, and shades of gray. Welcome to the Mimiverse.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast. This one we're going to go back to talking about Wereskito Nazi Hunter, but we do want to give a shout out to Mike Cook and Adam Bowl for last month's podcast being awesome guests. By the time you hear this, it'll have already happened, but you can pre-order or you can order your DVDs of The Monster Phantom Lake, the musical, exclamation point, at SaintEuphoria.com. Anyway, with that out of the way.
And should be on Amazon too.
Ah, there you go. With that out of the way, I'm proud to welcome back in her co-hosting duties, as she's so normally used to, the one and only Miss Ruby.
Yeah, I'll be the fire tender because it's March and we're outside.
Not just March, March 5th.
Yeah, at 6.
It's not even like end of March, which you could conceivably imagine maybe it's warm enough.
Yeah,
it's like early March.
It's March 5th. It's about 6:15 p.m.
Thanks for giving up your dinner hour.
Yes. Yeah. So, like we said, or like I said at the top, we're going to try to talk about Wereskito Nazi Hunter.
But with the guests we have, maybe not.
We're going to start this party right with, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, I guess we're going to go, the one and only Mr. Doug Sidney.
Thanks, Mark.
There you go. I was going to introduce Dan first, but then he got up because he was getting smoked out.
Careful, girls. He's engaged.
No, he's not. Oh.
And it started.
Please find him on Facebook and his relationship status.
You got to congratulate him on getting engaged to, what's her name?
No.
Dan, pull that microphone closer to you. While he's doing that, that is...
By the way, I'm here, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my apologies. You should have...
Who makes these films? God. Who makes these films and musicals?
Meh.
The guy who we're always blessed to have around our bonfire.
I wouldn't say blessed. Come on, now.
Did you introduce yourself?
Cheers.
I don't
know. I'm Christopher R. Mim, the writer and director of the movies.
We're already off the rails.
Started this whole thing.
Anyway,
Doug Sidney.
Yes.
Who's has a nice, young, future bride. I believe she may be pregnant.
Oh my gosh, you are the worst.
And Doug has left.
Blame me, Doug. I'm sorry.
Oh God.
Also in Where's Keto Nazi Hunter, Mr. Daniel R. for Roosevelt Sherman.
Oh, I forgot that. I forgot it was Roosevelt.
And once and for all, give us the correct spelling of your pronunciation of your name.
Sherman. Daniel Ronald Sherman.
Danron.
Danron.
Sherman.
Sherman.
Danron.
In the mother country, it's Siervin.
Oh, actually, there's a bottle opener here.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's in the pocket. Sorry. In the conveniently located pocket that I didn't tell you about.
My bad. Thank you.
And it has a magnet on it.
Thank you.
Getting smoked out.
Thank you.
A little bit.
You got a lot of editing.
Luckily, we've got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Luckily, you're the Green
Unlike
Lantern.
Sometimes.
Hey, man, I get compliments on this hoodie.
Mark always says
I
he's going to edit out, and he never does.
No, that's half the fun. So we're Skeeto Nazi Hunter, Christopher R. Mim.
Yes.
We're back to talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about...
Oh, yeah, that one.
It's the year of the we're Skeeto.
Let's talk about Doug first.
Because yes, let's.
Why
if
not?
If we don't, we'll have to hear about it all night.
I set that
so
up.
Sorry.
Doug's getting uncomfortable. You can see it in his face.
Staying warm.
I mean, you know, you're I'm sorry, fiance is expecting your child.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
Make any man nervous, really. Right, Dan?
I'm not. You know what? I
even I Dan is Doug. Leaving it alone.
I really like Doug a lot.
We'll
value his,
but I've stepped over the line.
I value
what you're
his
telling.
Opinion. I think he's a talented guy.
Oh, this has nothing to do with the movie. Back in the rails.
And I'll leave it at that.
There you go. Chris, tell us about why Doug. Other than the obvious.
Well, the reason I chose Doug is because of all, and this is going to totally make Dan feel bad, is of all the actors I've worked with, I felt that, you know, of the sort of the stable of artists that we had worked with before this new movie, which has a whole bunch of awesome new people who are completely replacing all the old people.
That's true.
No, of all the people we work with, I thought Doug was the one who could convey the... The gravitas the character deserved. You know, you could play the crazy, and you saw it in Wall People. The crazy was important, but also the sort of, you know, pained, you know, damaged human being. And really, I mean, it was kind of typecasting to a certain extent, but I don't know, Doug, he personified the sort of, like I said, that the crazy that needed to be there for someone who was... damaged. And I'm not saying he's crazy. I'm saying that we had seen it before, and so I knew Doug was capable of giving me the depth of emotion I needed for this particular story.
Also, I think Doug really kind of, for lack of a better word, seems to really relish these roles, like where you're kind of playing a darker character.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Well, and he had to be a likable anti-hero, basically. And that's not necessarily easy to do if you just come off like an asshole, right? You have to be likable, too. You have to feel some sympathy for the guy, right? Even knowing that he's doing these horrible things and killing people, right? So you have to feel something for him. And I thought Doug could straddle that line between likable and having to do what he had to do. My eyes are killing me because I'm getting smoked out. God.
I thought you were just crying, talking about Doug.
Oh, God. It hurts.
Emotional. Well, thank you, Mim.
So, I'm getting emotional because Doug did such a fantastic job. Dan, on the other hand, while a fine actor, he is, of course, known more for his scoundrelly charm.
Scoundrelly charm. He's like,
you know what?
He's like the Han Solo of the Mimiverse.
I was just
going
to say,
that's kind of what it is. Okay. And it's so awesome that now we found a younger version of Dan to be in the new movies so that as Dan ages out...
A topic we'll come back to, ladies and gentlemen.
Cookie don't got me beat.
Love you, Cookie.
Wait, how old are you now?
43.
You don't want that edit out?
Oh, it is what it is. Now we're the same age. You finally caught up.
You're just...
This is apparently...
rolling me out here.
It's always, always the Doug Sidney roast, basically,
it really
is what it is. Whatever we have on the show.
Everywhere I go.
Usually I don't do that unless it's...
There's
like
343s.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, there are 343s.
It's all about jealousy is what it comes down to.
Oh.
You know?
You know, it's me. I'm
Chris,
insecure.
You and me are the babies.
The
There's 343s.
We are the babies. Woohoo!
Who's 43?
I'm only...
You, 1, 2, 3, then.
I'm nice. Only 40, so I'm actually the child here.
Yeah. Yes, you are.
And yet I look the oldest of all you bastards.
That's true.
Son of a bitch.
Thank goodness for hair dye.
Well, you also have the most kids, so.
That's true.
That'll age one.
That'll make you grow gray fast.
It's all right. Doug? I'm the silverback gorilla. I'm cool with that. y'all are just my beta gorillas.
Doug, were you happy with how your portrayal came across on screen when you finally saw it? Did you hit what you were going for?
I felt good throughout filming, and getting to work with Chris is great because you know that you're working with someone who knows when he has it. And so with that level of collaboration there, I knew that if I wasn't sure if I was conveying what I wanted to, I could always reference him, and you know, he would know if he was getting what he needed. And I think that we have the kind of working relationship where if he needed something, he would be able to not only tell me that he did, but tell me what he needed.
Well, and I'll say that's one of the things I do like about working with Doug is that he's one of those actors that I can, he'll ask questions, and we can go back and forth, and it never feels like a power struggle between us.
Okay.
We can sort of give and take, and we both know that we're both trying to work toward the same goal.
Nice.
Dan is fun to work with.
Moving right along.
That's good. No,
of course, you know, and sort of going on with your question too.
Yes.
It is a great feeling when you can see a finished work and think, yeah, that's, yeah, I felt like that was what I wanted to convey there. Would you always like to have a few back? Yes.
Do you really? Yeah, exactly.
That's the one I always want back.
You know, in hindsight, can you think down the road, you know, I may have would have made it a little bit of a different choice there, but that was a great shoot. And it was definitely something different in terms of what you were doing with your other films, which was great to be a part of, that. We talked about a corner being turned. This was your first of your second decade, so to speak. That 11 and 11. Love it. And
working on 12 and 12.
Yeah. So, yes, my answer is yes.
You're proud of what you put up on screen.
I feel very honored to be a part of this, yes.
What was it like working with Rachel? Let me back up. Was this the first time you worked with Rachel Grubb?
I'm trying to think. We'd been on a couple of projects together, not collaborating together, but on a couple of the same projects. And I'm glad you brought that up because I've seen a lot of her work, us both being actors here, and I feel like for her, and we had many discussions together about this while we were on set and whatnot, far and away the best work that she's turned in. I think that she had a very, very strong hold on Lisa throughout. And I think that it was great working with her, absolutely, because we had a lot of work together. And I thought she was spot on.
There you go. So that's... Mim?
I think, too, with Rachel, that is very much so. And I think that Rachel's instincts as an actor and being a filmmaker and a writer in her own right has helped her a lot because there were times when she had questions about, like a scene in particular that I cut from the movie, and she really had sort of, like, problems with it because it felt off. And I filmed it anyway,
felt off? The part that was... that it was removed?
No, it felt off while we were doing it. She felt like it was not the right thing for her character because she sort of said that, you know, of everything else we've done, she seemed like she's this, like, sort of strong, you know, female character. In this one scene, she feels... she comes off almost across as needy or obnoxious.
So is that why you cut it?
It was a part of it, yeah. I thought it was just... it ended up feeling...
Wait, listen to your actress, Chris.
Well, it felt...
very cool.
For once. No, it felt extraneous, too, once it all came together. I was like, it just doesn't need to be there. It makes more sense. Because it felt like, to a certain extent, she was reiterating we already knew, but also giving away... also kind of... there's a twist, you know, toward the end.
She was telegraphing
it. And she was telegraphing it a little bit. And so... listening, you know, remembering sort of how we had that discussion back and forth, and I remember I had a little trouble defending against it because she was right. which I'm saying publicly. I hope she's listening. But no, she was right in her instincts, and so it did help toward saying, you know, she's right. We should take this out because it felt wrong. It felt off, and it just felt like it was just dragging it down. Where it was just like, okay, get on with it. We learn some of this other stuff later. We already know some of this stuff, so we're just kind of. We're, like I said, like you said, telegraphing
the twist.
It
in the deleted
it's a deleted scene on the disc, so you can see it. And I think if you watch it, you can say, "Oh yeah, this should not be here."
Where was it supposed to go in the original script?
It was supposed to go after the Wereskito comes back from Hans's house, from Gruber's house.
That's Christian Finch.
Christian Finch. He comes back to her house to ask her to translate the letters he finds. And
she speaks German,
right? And it was just this thing, sort of in the entryway, where he's like, "Hey, I need your help," and she's like, basically, like, "Hey, I like you a lot. We should totally hang out. Like, you should come hang out. You should meet my dad," and all this stuff. And it was just like, "We don't need that." She said, "Come back." He found some. He comes back and has her translate it. It's all you need to know. So, I think my approach to movie making, as I've made more and more, is. Early on, it was, I must leave everything in. Now it's like, how much can I strip out of here and still make a good movie?
So which it's is like, interesting, too, yeah. I was going to say, because you don't, over the course of your films, there isn't a lot that's been on the floor.
Right. I think that's partially, too, because I write them as well. I now write them and sort of simultaneously mentally edit them. So I will go back and do extra passes where I pull shit out. And that's not something I've done in the past. Like Wereskito, I pulled a lot out. This new one, I actually did 4 or 5 passes where I was really? Like, I'm pulling stuff out, and I'm going to make this as mean and lean as possible. And I think Mark, who has read the entire script, I know Ruby hasn't.
Nope.
Because she doesn't read the scripts.
Not even when I'm working on it. What's up?
But Mark, you know, I think you could sense that it's just kind of lean and mean. It's like, no, this is just the... bare bones, let's do it. Move.
For Wereskito and the new one.
And, yeah, and so, yeah, things aren't necessarily left on the cutting floor, if only because they were before we even shot it, if that makes sense.
Before scripts were even passed out.
Well, and also, I think your scripts have been good. As someone who's, I think, Cookie's been in more films. He's been in the most films.
Yeah. Michael's been in the most as the monster, obviously. He's been in every movie.
No, I meant Mike Cook, obviously.
Michael Kaiser, of course. Mike Cook has been in
most.
We'll after this one, be 11 of 12.
Right.
So he's the most. Yeah.
So I would have been, what am I, like 9 of 12?
I don't know. I think I almost feel like I should do like a breakdown to see which actors have been in the movies more.
I would, because, I mean, I've been on board since number 3.
Right, and you've kind of been what, every other one almost?
As a lead, for a while.
It was like 3 and 4.
And then I did audio cameos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've read almost all the scripts.
Yeah. Actually, on screen, I think you've been in at least probably 6 or 7 of them.
Yep. But your scripts have gotten better every year that I've known you. Every script.
Well, I think that's just practice and just trying to learn from my mistakes, you know?
Actually, if I can throw in a question here real quick. Chris, you actually just touched on it, and so did Doug. There was a thing that you mentioned that at the premiere for the Wereskito Nazi Hunter, some of the people that came because of my involvement with the film, they had a question about the relationship between John and Liesel.
Yeah.
They felt, in their words, it was Scott and Julianne. Mm-hmm. So they had a question. They felt that the relationship... Like that ball was hanging in the air for a really long time because he never really understood if they dug each other or if there was always like some sort of going to be some distance there. And they were like, was that supposed to, how was that relationship? They felt like that relationship kind of did not play out that well. Or not in a negative way, but they were just like, they were really confused by it.
I think the sort of nuance behind it that I was going for was that, Liesel, liking guys like Dan, you know, the jerk, obviously had a really
alpha male,
had a really bad relationship with, like, dating assholes, basically. And in the John character, she saw someone a little different.
That does carry through.
In that he was a guy who's actually going to sort of stand up for what's right. And, you know, he just meets her and he immediately beats the crap out of this one guy and says, you know, you leave her the fuck alone or else you're going to regret it, kind of a thing. And so to her, that kind of endears her to him. He doesn't really want any entanglements.
No.
Because he just has his revenge plot, You know, it's his sole thing. He doesn't care. I think he cares about her, but I think that, and that's one of the things that we scaled back a little bit in that scene, was that she was kind of throwing herself at him a little too much. Because she thought, oh my God, this guy's so dreamy. He stood up for me and beat up this asshole.
Yeah, in the diner scene.
Right, in the diner scene. Yep. And so she likes him, but he's given her kind of a bit of a cold shoulder and using her a little bit for her information and, you know, not using her, but, you know, taking advantage of an opportunity.
Yes, right. That's a better word for it.
Well, and I'll weigh in too, because what I really liked was that he conveyed that in a way that was sensitive to her and with kid gloves, in that he wasn't cold-hearted about it, although he was clear enough that she would typically walk away when she would loft it up there for him. He would very softly shoot it down, but in a sensitive way, because
all right.
It conveyed that he could feel what she was he was able to be sympathetic to it.
Okay.
Because ultimately he is a good guy.
Yeah.
Just stuck in these horrible situations.
Yeah, he could understand where she was coming from, but at the same time, too, he was not going to lead her on. He knew what he was there to do and why, and knew what it would not entail.
And even that, like, I think you see that a little bit at the end, toward the end, when he comes back and realizes, you know, who's there, and even points the gun at her, not as a way to be a dick to her, but as a way to kind of save her, where he's like, you know, the only way I know I'm going to get her to go is if I threaten her enough that the other guy in the room tells her to leave.
Yes.
Because she's torn between her loyalties.
Yep.
And so, again, and then that's his character.
There's a moral fiber there.
There's a moral fiber there where it's like he probably wouldn't actually hurt her, but,
right.
You know, he had to, he was right there, you know, it's like his goal is right standing in front of him, and he's gonna, you know, try and save her even then. But at the same time, you know, I think his goal is more important.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a good person. She just has the misfortune of having a really terrible father, and then liking terrible guys.
There you go.
She's damaged, too, I mean, to a certain extent.
As a postscript to this, these two same people that were questioning the relationship or non-relationship, as it were, the one thing that they did say was they were impressed at the fact that at the end, the good guy doesn't get the girl because of the twist at the end. And spoiler, if you haven't seen the movie, go buy it at euphoria.com
or Amazon.
And then
listen to this, so we can just discuss it. It's been out long enough.
It's been a while.
So it was interesting in the sense that ball was in the air again, like that you never really knew were they going to end up together, and then twist, they weren't. So
well, and then even then at that last scene, when I guess we're just giving up spoilers, if you haven't seen the damn movie, stop listening. When he does get her out of the room finally, because Schramm tells her to, she comes back and hits him in the back of the freaking head to stop him from doing this. So it's like it all kind of goes to hell at that moment. And then so we figure out that in the next scene, when it literally all goes to hell, it's kind of all you know, gloves are off.
There you go.
And it just becomes ridiculous.
So true.
I actually really like that scene, that whole scene in the basement, because I feel like it, I don't know, it's one of the more classic sort of 50s monster movies things I've ever done.
Wicked.
And it's just insane.
Yeah.
And it shows just how horrible Schramm really is.
Oh yeah,
because he doesn't care about anything or anyone.
Nope,
not at all.
He's a nasty puppet.
He's just
master.
A nasty piece of
shit. So that would explain, or that totally justifies Doug's character for me, because he knows the extent of this guy's assholishness.
Right,
he lived it.
So
he lived it. Right.
Speaking of assholes, let's talk to Dan Shervin.
Yeah. Nice segue, good transition.
Yeah, way to play against character, Shervin.
Yeah.
One of the sweetest, most thoughtful people we know.
That is absolutely true in every sense of the word. Whenever speaking for the on behalf of this show, whenever I ask Dan, he's always like, "Hell yeah, let's do it. Let's have some fun." So for this one,
Dan's family. That's what we're gonna say. Dan is as much family as anyone I know.
Dan Ron, as we like to call him now.
I've baptized two of Chris's kids.
Seriously.
There it is.
I mean, we always tell a story when he first auditioned for Cave Women, it was like
terrible.
I was like, he's awful, but I don't know this guy, but there's something about him. I feel like I know him.
You
like,
just want to hang out with him.
I was just like, I want to hang out with him, but I felt like I got Dan because it was just, and I always said this, like, you just, there's something about you, and maybe it's some sort of weird, you know, genetic connection or something because we're both super Norwegian or something, but it was just like, you felt like a cousin almost, like the moment I met you, like you're some sort of distant cousin.
Well, also our family dynamics
are very similar.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And so it was just like, it's like, even if I don't agree with this guy on anything, I feel like I could hang out with him like a cousin, you know, it's like, like that family thing. And that was like immediate on meeting him. And that was a huge part of why you got the part. It was just like, I could actually probably enjoy making a movie with this guy, even if he gave a really bad audition. But also, you played off well with the girls, which really worked because you had to. I mean, we were, you know, you and Brooke. I mean, there was clearly a spark between the two of you.
We had done a movie before, so we already knew each other.
Sure.
And the reason I auditioned is because she said, "Hey, I know this guy, Chris."
Can we put in the divorce, divorce flute theme music?
Song? I can still hear the flute.
This is they're speaking, of course, of Cavewoman on Mars all the fans like Richard Haugland, who is a big fan of that film, and he makes no bones about it. Probably.
Why does he like it?
Because of scantily clad women.
Well, he really and he really likes
me. Wasn't for me and Josh the only male.
He really likes Rachel a lot.
He loves thanks on Rachel. Behalf of Michael Kaiser Bum Bum.
Yes. Oh yeah, Mike's
in his skin bikini, basically.
There is
his
that
skin bikini.
So the question, when I read the script and I knew that you were going to be Rachel's alpha male boyfriend.
Well, abusive boyfriend.
There you go.
Drinky.
There was that final
with
scene
with the best wig ever.
Seriously. Okay, you know, can we talk about the wig?
Go for it.
Mitch was actually supposed to. I agreed to Chris that I was going to come out of my semi-retirement as long as I didn't have to. I said I don't want to look like me. It's like, oh, well, Mitch will make you a fake nose. It'll be great, you know. And I'm thinking it's going to be kind of like, is it Ocean's 13? You know, when he has, which one has the big schnoz? Is that Matt Damon has
yeah.
this big yes. fake schnoz? And I thought, okay, this will be good because people are like, man, that kind of looks like Dan's, like, messed up. Yeah, like too many bar fights. His nose is twice
too much whiskey. Too many bar fights.
Yeah, he has Jim Blossom going on.
Yes.
What is it? Time or money? We didn't have money, or didn't have the time.
I don't remember. It just didn't happen. So we were stuck with let's put a wig on him.
Yeah.
And we bought the cheapest.
It was terrible.
Party City wig we could get. And it was like a Justin Bieber like type wig or something almost. Totally. And we just cut it, and it looked so bad.
It looked really bad. I was like, ugh. When I saw the script and I knew that it was going to be you, that last scene, you're playing drunk. I literally thought you might actually go nose first and show up just drunk. Or it's like, Hater, let's go get some beers and let's.
I don't know if I could. I had my kid. If you recall, I had my children with me.
Oh, that's right.
My little girls, actually, it's the first time they ever came to set, and I knew that this one is probably going to be the scariest and the most disturbing, and they still have not seen it because they just recall the movie is when Doug throws water at Daddy. That's what they don't. Remember the guy?
You got a lot of coverage of that, by the way.
Actually,
we did it twice.
Wasn't it cold coffee?
It was real cold coffee.
Yeah.
It was the last thing we ever shot, I think.
It was.
I also got a great action shot at the exact moment. It should be on the DVD if
I'm
not mistaken.
I got one too. That's actually a still from the movie is awesome because it's like the moment it's all splashed off his face.
That was truly amazing.
And I have a side note on that too. I am very, like, in terms of props, I'm very vigilant about props being as realistic as possible because there's nothing worse, for example, if you're in a coffee shop and two lattes are purchased and you can hear the clank of two empty cups being set down. There's just nothing worse. Yeah. And I'm not about continuity or anything like that, but in terms of props and what I remember about seeing the film in the different scenes in the diner, every time that cup was as full as it should have been based on the real time of the scene.
Oh yeah, right.
And I
does that warm your heart? Is it good?
Yeah.
But that was all Doug, man. He made a point that was like, no, it has to have. And then so it looks real, too, when you the way you're holding it, the way you pick it up, it's got weight and, you know, that if there's liquid, so you got to be careful, the whole thing. So it actually works. There's one shot, I think, where there's like a wide shot when you first come in. Joel Thingball's in that scene. And, you know, the scene starts with his cup being filled. When you walk in the door, there's nothing in his cup. And because of your vigilance on making sure your cup was perfect, now that bothers me because you can see it.
Yes.
Because they're like they're light older cups from like the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when he's holding up, you can kind of see the light going through it. And you can tell there's just nothing in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, damn it.
Man, this is going to sound absolutely terrible. I forgot he was in there because it's so long ago.
He's just barely in it. So.
I know. I like we passed each other in the doorway.
Yeah, yeah. He walks. He exits frame, and you enter frame through the door.
It's a good scene. It's a great scene.
Now, Dan, I'm not completely 1,000% familiar with your entire filmography, but
who is? I mean, come on, listen.
I know.
Let's
he's.
Who are you kidding? I got roasted for some of the movies I was in.
What are you talking about? Group Home is good stuff.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Lambent Fuse.
Oh, yeah, you were in that, too.
Lambent Fuse.
That what's that?
Were you a cop in that one?
hold on. Lambent Fuse, I was, yeah.
Hey, right. Norgard's giant head is in that, too.
He a cop in that one?
Yes, he was. He's
so
in, like,
you two are the cops.
We are that's the cops.
Dan, always. Now, yes. Going back to the Wereskito, is this the first character that you had to play kind of an abusive boyfriend type role?
Yeah, this is the first time that I ever got to be mean.
Really?
You said mean, not me, right?
Mean.
Okay. For a second, I was like, make sure everyone understands. Yes. M-E-A-N.
Yeah, no.
Just in case someone's not really paying attention. You
know, and the first time I had to, like...
kind of grab a
I
woman.
I get more physical in Chris's movies than any other movies that I've ever done.
And oh, come on.
Sometimes behind the scenes, right, Brooke?
Easy sugar.
The fight scene from X Beyond... the Fiend from Beyond Space, that was the fight scene at the end is... That's epic stuff right there.
He punched Michael in the face.
I accidentally punched Michael once in the face.
That's actually great.
And I punched him once in the stomach when he's wearing the bat costume.
Oh, that's right.
I accidentally, and I'm like, oh, I mean, I literally made contact.
There's like a lot of great bloopers of that, I think, on every DVD. You can see it because your reactions, I was like, oh, shit.
I know, I feel so bad.
That's the other thing that Dan and Doug have in common is that they were both in the late night double feature, just an opposite.
That's true.
In opposite
films. So I think that was actually the first time that you and I actually did something together, was that?
And yet you were separated by...
No, Attack.
Oh, yeah, you're in Moon Zombies, man.
Oh, we were in
an
elevator together. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
You were Captain Ace Frehley, man.
Yeah. You guys hated each other because he kept calling you Herman.
That's right.
Philip.
That's right.
You know what's funny is that...
I just saw that...
Don't call me by my Christian name. Yeah,
I just saw that recently, actually.
You know what's funny?
I was showing it in...
Yeah.
At the Richardson Draft House.
You know, and for so many people that your performance or Attack of the Moon Zombies is one of their favorite Christopher R. Moon films. They literally like
that one often ranks up there as what people consider top tier.
And you have, you Doug and Dan, have both a huge part in that. So.
I think that's a solid film. I think now I'd probably edit some out of it, but I think it's a solid film for what it is.
What would you take out of it?
Just some of the smaller things that maybe quicken the pace a little bit to get to the zombies. But
no one's going to stand there and give a soliloquy. No.
Yeah. I might try to add a little more
action to those.
Maybe just take out some of the maybe smaller bits, just to crank it up a little bit. But at the same time, making these old style movies, there is a certain leeway I have with, you know, not necessarily jumping the gun. It doesn't have to be a modern action movie, you know. Nope. So
exactly right.
It's always, and that's the thing about Wereskito. That's really interesting to bring it back to Wereskito.
Please do.
That I'm seeing a lot of the reviews is that there are no midway reviews. People either love it or hate it.
Yep. Do you guys?
I would have to say that this felt like one of your faster paced movies, though.
Yes, but some people don't necessarily. Some people like that it feels more like a grown up movie. And it does have an authenticity.
As opposed to...
Well, I mean...
I can tell you right now, that movie is not a kid's movie.
I mean. People like that. Some people sort of... It really depends. I mean, you can never fight with anybody's... You know, my movies, I think, are varied enough that they might not necessarily be for everybody, each one. If you like Giant Spider, you may not like Wereskito. But no, is that the... The negative reviews have been not harsh. They seem more confused as to what the hell we were trying to do.
I'll buy that.
In what way?
Just in that they're kind of like...
But the story was easy to follow. It made sense.
No, I think it was just that it's so dark and bleak.
And it's a prequel.
And it's not particularly funny. You know, I get that. It's like, it's not funny at all. It's like, well, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
But that's me fighting with their expectations of what these movies should be. But then people, like, hate the giant spider because it's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't
win. You can't win, so just
don't
bother.
Whereas other people love the Giant Spire because it's funny. So
I like the review. This is total BS. This movie was made just last year.
I know. Like, what? There was another one recently of the Giant Spider that's just angry again. Some angry really? Dude is just like, God, and he just goes off. And at the same time, it's like, it's weird because the guy goes off because it's like not, he's the way it sounds is, it's like it's almost he's saying, the Giant Spider is not authentic enough. And I don't understand why this guy used all these old techniques for the special effects.
Well, that doesn't sound very
it's like,
well rehearsed.
You I can't mean, f-ing have it both ways. Either it's too modern or it's not.
You know, okay, so let me ask you that because I started thinking about this because I think we figured it out. We've known each other for, what, 15 years now almost?
Jesus.
It's coming up, yeah. You always seem to have something in the chamber, you know, already.
Yeah, I'm always ready to
go. So like right now, so we're talking about a movie that was the past. You're working on a movie that you're presently, you know,
right, gonna, freezing my ass off to make, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It was cold yesterday.
So it was cold yesterday.
Because you always have like two or three pictures, ideas anyway, like I said, in the chamber. What are you thinking about for the future?
Oh, I got like two or three already worked out.
That's what I just
much.
Said. Yeah. You're stealing what I just said.
Yeah. Do the Western.
Because I'm going to tell you right.
Do the Doug Western.
I think it's time that Doug and I
play a couple on screen. I agree.
Let's
break the barrier.
Let's break the barrier, man.
After you
broke back Mimiverse,
do the Western.
That's
next,
what I'm saying. Do it on the do
you
the
should
Western.
Maybe
well, broke
do
back
an online
Mountain was kind
thing.
Of a Western.
And again,
so.
After you do the Western next, do an online thing where you throw three or four taglines.
I know
out
you
there
did that before. It was
and
cool.
Let your fans.
Let the fans decide what
hey,
they want
there's
next.
There's a shirtless guy next door. What? He's oh, hairy. No.
Awesome.
Oh my God.
What?
I sure it's not one of the dogs?
Room. Nice, that's Trip.
It's actually just one of
look,
the huskies next door.
That's our neighbor season. Trip. So actually, that you guys just touched on something that I was going to ask. Do you guys read your own reviews in movies that you've been in?
I would read them if I had access to them. I don't, I mean, ma'am, if you left the links, and I mean, you know, I'm in a place where I would read them very constructively, and...
Well, and I try to do that too. Honestly.
Which, but yeah. Actually, Doug, while we're on the subject, you do not enjoy going to screenings of your own films, though, right? Didn't we talk about that on a previous episode?
I really enjoy it from a very critical standpoint because I love to get in and see work that I've done to dissect it so I can figure out what I need to do better next time.
So you're okay. Like a pro athlete. You're
see
watching the
works.
Films to improve your performance.
Yeah, I'm okay
time.
With seeing it, but it's for that reason.
Okay,
but and the, once in a blue moon, you know, I'll be like, okay, I'm happy with that, and then I like to go in and go back to what I was thinking about that and dissect what my train of thought was when I feel like I was able to execute what I wanted to. Most of the time, though, I wanna look at that stuff to see what I can do to be better next time.
Interesting. How about you, Dan?
Well, most of the time, reviews, I'll be honest, whatever Chris sends me, I'll read. Whatever. I mean, what other people send me, I'll read. Like, when I go to, I think when I go to premieres and stuff like that and screenings. Hey, Doug, can you grab me one of these? It's one of those things where I'm there for the entertainment of it. I'm here to, like, I've said it a million, I think I've said it on every single podcast I've ever been on. When I go to work on a Chris Mim movie, it's like summer camp. It's a reunion of all my friends that I've got to know over the past, you know, 15 years. It's, you know, it's a really good time. We give each other a lot of crap, but I think at the end of it, we all make really good
things. Dan's choking me up.
I know. Seriously, this smoke is...
Smoke is like
sorry.
Right in my face.
Hold on. Just, I mean, I take it back. I mean, Chris.
Damn it.
it's not the smoke. I'm here to tell you.
I love you.
You know, we've been doing this layout for years. Right. We need to maybe think about doing it the other way around.
Yeah, maybe. It seems maybe. Like the wind always tends to blow around in my face.
Do you want me to shift? You can come
yeah, right.
Over.
I might want to... I'm going to move closer right. to Ruby real
we gotta
quick.
We got to get a left-handed smoke shifter. No, but like if people show it to me, like when I go to reviews and stuff, it's fun. I think for this movie, I sat next to Doug and his dad, and you know, it was kind of fun to get to. I met Doug's dad. You know,
yeah,
it's that kind of fun stuff that you know. That's what premieres. He is. He's a genuine guy.
Did you guys come out to him?
Oh God!
Wow!
I said we sat next together. Actually, no, we had someone in between us.
Did you have hold hands?
No, we had someone who sat between us. I said, that'd be really awkward. Reaching across the person. Yeah.
It's all done in love, Doug. You know we love you. You're a good sport. You can take it.
That's actually true. If we didn't really love you, you wouldn't really.
But you guys both realize, though, that these reviews, like, you can go on Amazon and click on Giant Spider, and you can
look
read
them up,
all the
and
reviews.
You can read a lot of them. They're usually incoherent bullcrap, but
I will tell you, I follow Doug's. Here's the thing: is like, if whatever I did was something that I was building at
another
that
beer,
time,
man.
And if you look at my scripts, they're always full of notes. And like what Doug said, it's because Chris and I had probably a lengthy conversation, and the conversation was because we start off joking about his wife and my kids, and
the joke that never dies.
It never dies.
Steph and, really loves
and
that
so
joke.
We
she loves
about,
it.
Hey, tell me about this. Tell me about this. Tell me about
like
this.
I said, if that's true, Dan owes me some serious money.
I know, that's right.
some child support.
That was just a Facebook thing the other day.
Yes, it was.
Was that you?
That was
too?
Me, yes.
Yeah, I knew it was you. but I will tell you, I think I look back on it. Like when the DVD comes out, whenever I get my copy, I'll look at it, and that's when I critique myself a lot,
like in the privacy of your own home, kind of a thing.
And it's in the privacy of my home, because I can watch the movie through my hands, through my fingers, which is like when Chris was editing. You know, we were working together at the time when that was being edited. I'm like, you're not really using the. Do you really? And he's like, yeah, I'm using that one. I go, what? No, that's not the right one. And he's like, you know, Dan, all the ones you think are crap are the ones I really like. And
the truth is, there was no good take.
There's no good take on all that one. So, I mean, like, it's that kind of stuff. But as far as reviews go, I could give three shits.
Really? Okay.
I mean, people's opinions are people's opinion. I know what I was trying to accomplish at that time, and maybe it wasn't.
Well, and I think probably the longer you do this, and maybe I could probably speak for you guys too a little bit, is that you realize kind of quickly once you do this long enough that you're fighting with people's opinions and expectations and tastes.
And trolls
live
everywhere, you know?
I mean, it's like for every guy who goes on Amazon and says they love the Giant Spider, or they go on there and say, oh, my God, Terror from Beneath the Earth is my favorite of his movies, you have just another guy who's like, this is the worst movie ever. This guy should be shot. They're all a bunch of middle schoolers. I mean, it's stuff like that. You get used to these people complaining, and it's like, well, my response now to those people, it's like, well, I'm sorry, thank you for your $10. No, you can't have it back. I mean, it's kind of what all you can look
well,
at
I
it
don't
as.
Value
it's like,
those
well,
opinions more than I value your opinion or Doug's opinion, because, I mean, if I want to talk to you, I was like, God, what could I have done better there? Because that seemed kind of icky. Or and I feel like I do that. I think we all do that, like real time.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. That wasn't good.
I don't know. I mean, just you can't fight with everybody over everything, because you're gonna.
That's not collaborative, and that's not creative. That's,
it's well, no, and it's just like some people just aren't going to like things, you know. And
I think for
there's
us
nothing wrong with that
too. When you get to a certain point as creatives, you know when you've gone in and killed it, and you know when you've phoned it in, and you know when you left something on the table. Yeah. And so
never for you, Chris. I've never done that.
Well, but
I can't even look at him.
But again,
well, he gets so much damn coverage. It's just it's more of an endurance thing than hey, well,
how many times have
I know,
knocked down in the middle?
I know
of the night
I was off for about a half hour in there, but the other 90 minutes that we shot that scene,
the other 90,
he got about something. Plus, you know, plus, you know, when you're in the hands of a good editor, that like, well, he'll piece it together.
If
well,
I'm doing bad, he'll cut off of me.
It's funny because I actually
Ruby
told a story to the new cast of Demon with the Atomic Brain the other day.
Yeah.
We were shooting something, and it called for one of the actors to be thrown to the ground.
Yeah.
Because he's pulled off screen by a monster, basically.
Yeah.
And so he has to fall to the ground off camera. And I was like, I won't make you do this too much. I won't Dan Shervin this on you. And I'm like, and before any of you are wondering, like, what the hell are you talking about? So this guy named Dan Shervin, I made this movie called Cave Women on Mars. And in this scene, he's supposed to be hit by a stick and he falls flat on his face on the dirt.
3 o'clock
outside
in the morning.
Repeatedly. I said, we did take after take after take. And finally, Dan said, you get one more.
Because it was like 45 minutes.
It was over and over and over again. And And then I said, and the funny thing is I made, I said, okay, we'll do one more. We did one more. So, you know, at this point, he's just, he's done. I made him do it over and over again, and I used the first take.
You're such a dick.
And so that was my thing. That everyone's like, oh, okay, we're good then. Yeah. No worries.
Yeah, yeah.
Babe, you had a question?
Oh, yeah. No, just a statement to go back to what the gents were talking about. I think, you know, as they said, they're both pro actors. They know what they're feeling. They've, you know, talked about the character. They're trying to, you know, telegraph something. As long as you feel like what's coming off of your face and body at that time is what you and Chris were looking for, then, I mean, you... Seriously. How can you even be sad about if someone didn't like the movie? Like, poop on it. You got what you were looking for. He got what he was looking for. It was clear. It's different when you look at it and go, whoa, I thought I was happy and I look like I'm miserable. Neither of you is probably ever going to have that because you're kind of pros.
Also, I think I've learned one thing that's really interesting about online reviews. That's kind of funny, is that there are just a bunch of trolls out there who like to just complain. Yeah. And it seems like there are just a certain number of people that just like to post negative shit about everything.
That's true.
And well, I think you get dollars every time you post any review
at
all,
or something, right? Because, like, there was actually, for Cave Women on Mars, someone actually posted a review, and the review was, it looks terrible. I couldn't even make it through the opening credits.
Wow.
And I'm thinking to myself,
after a long time.
That's literally
space.
That's literally 90 seconds you turned it off.
Thanks for your $10, dude.
It's like a shot of space with a little voiceover
of Stephanie
credits.
Lynn.
Yeah. And a ship.
You couldn't make it through that. Your review is invalid. You're not reviewing shit. You're just being an asshole.
You just graded a movie while you're standing in line.
Exactly. It's like you literally turned it on and was like, nope, and then felt the need to go online and give it a 1-star review. Yeah. Thanks, dick. Yeah. You know, it's just like that kind of stuff. It just makes me more mad than anything else. Because it affects the overall thing, but it's like you didn't actually watch it. You couldn't give it a real constructive opinion.
Well, and you can't take that as a ding against you where you go cry yourself to bed movie.
Right, it's like you made it 90 seconds in. Well, thanks for your $2.99. You rented it.
I will tell you,
you're not
actor,
getting it back.
If you don't have the thick skin enough, I mean, being an actor is how many jobs you get on auditions? 2 a month?
It all depends.
I know it all depends. The point is this: if you don't have a thick skin and you can't handle rejection, you're in the wrong business.
Right.
Right.
If you can't handle criticism.
Exactly.
If you don't develop that a strong sense of self,
right?
I mean, don't get me wrong. Everybody has that. Oh, I just. Oh, Lord, help me. You know, everybody goes through those waves. But I mean, I specifically remembered when I was actively auditioning and stuff. I was like, man, I've booked something once a month, and I was feeling fine because I still had a day job, and it was like good. And somebody said, you need to shut up because I haven't booked anything for a year. And I'm like,
I will shut up.
I'm sorry, and I can't imagine that's. I mean, you have to be doing twice that.
Doug's the king of local commercials.
He really is.
He does a great job.
I was telling the story off air, but I'll tell it now.
Handsome man, him.
Doug's on a lot of local commercials. And I'll
like
be
the
like,
insurance one the most.
I'll be like sitting on my couch and the kids are in the other room watching TV, and I'll hear one of them yell, Doug's on TV again!
We do that all the time in our house.
It's Doug!
I love your kids.
Well, and so just to touch back for a second, I'm on all the boards or all the private groups for the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical. And everyone's real excited to see the DVD version of it, the movie version of it.
Turned out really good.
Well, and I think that most of, I would say everyone but probably Cook, has been pretty much theater only. You don't get to see your own performance.
If you're
lucky, there's someone with a VHS camera from the 80s in the back.
Exactly.
It's your mom or your dad.
Right, mom and dad from 100 feet away. You can't zoom in enough.
I call it the middle school camcorder.
And the tracking is all fucked up.
Yeah, and they're trying really hard not to zoom in on their loved one, but you
remember
can't even
tracking?
See.
Tracking.
But you can't see what your face is doing anyway, and all the actors are planning to go to the Monster Day release.
Oh, they're in for
and
it.
All,
they are in for it.
All of the actors are like, oh my God, I have to see my face on screen.
I suppose that is weird. I didn't
think
of that.
They I mean, you don't even get the opportunity to see yourself.
No,
back.
I suppose.
Let Rachel and Justin character that has to kiss.
It was a guy named Christopher Sturz and Hannah Monterey Jones.
Yeah. Okay, so don't bring here's as somebody who had a theme song to his divorce.
That hasn't happened
yet. When you take your wife to the drive-in theater and she gets to watch you kiss, well, 50 feet actively kiss somebody, then
Doug
also somebody else
has a note.
Pull
Doug
your
has a note.
Lip off the off your body, 90 Bleep. Feet tall.
Yeah,
she's. I think she slept through that night at the drive-in.
She might have. Her and Liz took a snoozer.
Yeah, that was a pretty late night.
Yeah,
so Doug was so animated.
Doug had something
that.
To say.
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
So this is taking us back to our theme for the night, I guess, which I'll do this intentionally, but there had to be some way to segue into this. So there was something that happened on Where Skeeto that I don't think has happened before.
Oh, did you have a magic moment?
No, it's
it's not magic.
It's very sideline about
tell me a story and then I'll finish.
But there was a pop theme song written for the film, video shot for the film, which I don't think it's been done before with your films, which really got skipped over, and I'm so glad it's on the DVD, and I saw it right during the week when the film was coming out, and you and I were talking a lot about it, a lot of different stuff getting ready for that premiere and whatever, but that is such a cool thing.
Where
that
can
happened.
We find this, Doug?
And this could be found. It's from the 5 Cent Psychiatrist.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and it's called like Do Lucy the Skeeto. And this has to be a great story. But the video was awesome. And there was something really neat about seeing work that was done in the film that was used as a part of the video.
Right.
Like, it encapsulates the project in such a cool, unique way.
What was it? What was? I haven't seen it yet. So, are you trying to spoil
this,
it?
It's this. No, I'm not trying to spoil anything. It's this.
No, it's out there.
Called
it's been
the
out
5 Cent Psychiatrist, and they wrote a song based on the film after the film was made. That
called
Chris
Do
must
the
have
Skeeto.
Showed them called Do the Skeeto.
And the guys in that band are the same guys who wrote the end theme song to the late night double feature.
Okay, awesome. And it's they're
what about
so
the guys
talented.
Who did the giant spider, is that them too?
No, but they were sort of related to those guys in that. The singer in 5 Cent Psychiatrist and the band Bad Horse that did the late night double feature was the head of the label on which the Night Hobbs was.
Good
that did the giant spider.
Nice.
And this thing was so cool because this band is so era appropriate. The song was so era appropriate. And it featured them, and then it had clips from the film, which that was such.
I edited that together. They shot. They shot the band stuff, and I edited
that. Notoriety for anything, it's when you get your work
used. Yeah, as inspiration.
Used
yeah.
As part of a storytelling element of something completely different. It was so cool. If you haven't seen the video, those of you that are listening, you
buy
have
the
to
DVD.
Check it out. Go to the DVD, or it's you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Do the Skeeto from the 5 Cent Psychiatrist.
We'll make sure to post it here on
the
page.
The original band was called Bad Horse.
Yeah,
like from Dr. Horrible.
Yes.
Nice. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, the guy. His name's Dan Flanagan. They live down in Florida. It was one of those things when we were doing the Giant Spider. He contacted me, and we worked out the whole thing with the theme song. And ever since, he's just like, "I want to do a song for your movies. Whatever you want, man, let's do it."
That is
so. For Where Skeeto, we talked about it, and I was like, "Well,
right."
Where Skeeto is a really serious movie, so I don't see where throwing a pop song in makes sense. And he's like, "But we want to do something. What do you think?" And I think we came up with the idea.
Yes,
we came up with the idea when we were shooting one day. Because I was talking to Mitch Gonzalez about how they wanted to do a song, and it's the final scene where John Baker is tied up to the ceiling of that basement, and it was the scene we actually shot when Doug wasn't there, because it was after he turned into the Were-Skeeto, so right. Michael Kaiser taking over, he was trying to pull the. Pull the chains down from the ceiling, and he was just kind of shimmying and shaking.
Yeah,
and he looked like he was dancing. And Mitch made a joke about, oh, we got to do a thing about do the Were-Skeeto or do
the
Skeeto
movie. You're saying
no, it really didn't work in the movie because it's just it's jokey. And so I talked to Dan about it, and he's like, dude, we're on this, we got it. And he took it
Mitch
and he
Gonzalez
ran with it.
Mitch is going to be in the new Western, who's going to be the Chavez character from
Young Guns. He only says C. See.
But he's a badass with a blade.
Wait, hold on to that. Exactly. Hold on to that until part two, but finish your story.
Oh, well, I was just going to ask the gents, since do you two do any theater at all? I mean, since college or high school or whatever. Do you do theater or just films?
I'm kind of in retirement, but we'll see after. I've had some personal life changes.
Whoa.
I get to be a better husband and a better father. And hopefully
yes.
I have a better work-life balance now.
Yes.
And
we hear you finally transitioned fully.
I
don't wow. be like that. Don't to be what? Like that.
To whatever it is you're doing now.
To a 9 to 5.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what you're talking
the
about.
The transition will be finished after next week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so maybe I can come out of retirement a little bit.
But I think it's different when you're a movie actor rather than a theater actor primarily, because you know you kind of have to go to the premiere, you kind of have to watch yourself on the screen. It's not like you're going to be rude and turn around anytime you're on the screen and be like, "Oh, you'll ruin it for everybody." You just got to suck it up and watch yourself.
Yep.
So I think it's different for movie people to watch their own selves on screen than theater people to watch themselves on screen. I kind of can't wait to see how these poor actors.
You know, it's funny, Ruby. I guess
these new folks.
I never thought of that angle. So now I'm actually really excited to see. Just watch them squirm.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I've never even thought about that. I mean, yeah, it's because I've always, you know, we've always been the movie guys.
Yeah.
So it's like to me, it's like, oh watch yeah, well, of course audience. You watch yourself because that's what it is, right?
They're gonna see.
Oh my God, this is gonna be fun.
They're gonna see the notes in action that Cook gave them. They're gonna see the things that why the audience laughed. I mean, oftentimes. With this particular show, oftentimes it's not actually because, oh, they did the flashy lighty thing.
Right.
You know, it's because they did something pretty fucking amazing. And there's a
he doesn't delete anything.
It certainly won't be the first bleep of tonight. I'll
no,
say that.
No. But I kind of can't wait to watch them because I'm at tech table. I give notes. I don't give actor notes, but I tell Cook the things I saw, and Cook can give the notes.
I'm actually really excited for the orchestra too.
They'll finally get
to see what it looks like instead, because yeah.
they're on stage.
Yeah. They're seeing it all from behind.
They were behind
the scrim and the whole thing,
which so, they never get to do. Anyways,
right, so it'll also. Be really interesting for them to actually see the show because they've never technically seen it.
Right. I think my only point here was I think that it's different for movie people to see themselves on screen than. For and perhaps to rewatch themselves to learn or not learn or enjoy the film without thinking about their performance than it is for a theater person. That was all.
Also,
there's
you know,
a lot of nerves on. I don't know if you're on the private groups, but there's a lot of nerves.
I haven't seen it. I know Doug watches it and he's like, oh man, I'd act me so hard.
That's just awkward. Watch, I was going to say,
all your performances.
Nice. I was going to say,
Chris,
just
good job. Getting all this fresh young blood in.
It's been fun.
I love being a part of the casting process.
Yeah, Doug was there.
Oh, that's right.
Doug was like, you need help. I was like, sure, come on.
That was, I mean, as an actor, I love being on that other side and seeing that because I learned so much about, you know, being able to know what that's like. Yeah, I loved being a part of it. And some stories came about from that night that have an impact on your film, too. I think the last person that came in,
yes,
Mim, and great story because, you know, a couple of us in the room were... just like, hey, it's the end of the night, or if you want, I can be really candid.
Were you spent or just done?
No. It was just we were running. We had a lag and we were done. And somebody bopped in late and they apologized for being late or whatever. And do we do this? Do we not? Do we pack it up? The better of us said, no, this person is going to come in and.
Well, I was just like, let's do it. I was like, and I remember you came in. I was like, you got 5 minutes.
Yeah, you were not having it.
I was just like, well, because I was packing up. Yep. And the thing is like, he hadn't actually signed up.
Yeah.
He was
all
one of
these things.
He was one of those, like, most of the people had signed up and picked a time slot. He had just sort of emailed me, like, at the last moment, and I said, well, I don't know. He just showed up on a whim to try and get a chance.
All right.
And, yeah, like,
we'll
so I was packing up.
We'll be transparent. And I said, Mim. Just he may give you what you need. Just
yeah,
just get him on tape.
And so
and I don't know. We didn't even record.
No, we didn't record it.
We didn't even record it. And you just said, "Fine, we'll do it."
I said, "Fine, you got 5 minutes. Do it." And he gave this great monologue, and he ended up getting the role.
What was the monologue? Was that the pep talk?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but it was really funny.
Yeah, it was a coach thing. It was a coach thing. Yeah.
And it was he was really funny, and he's and the thing is he pulled a Shervin, and he's the guy who immediately I was like, he reminds me of Shervin. He's the poor man Shervin.
Yeah.
Or maybe
here's the thing, maybe eventually
you'll be the rich man's.
I didn't even sign up for an audition for Chris's film. I made it late, and it's because of Brooke Lemke that I even auditioned.
No, it just worked out. It's kind of a funny story because he just...
I need to meet this young man.
And the funny thing is, he's of all the cast, he's the one that's probably the most enthusiastic. And he's the guy who... He set the bar for other actors, honestly, in a way that no other actor has.
What character does he have? What's it called?
He's playing the character of Agar. His name's Tyler Haynes. He's a really crazy nice guy. He showed up. We were shooting a couple weeks, 3 weeks ago. We were shooting a weekend's worth of stuff, so long stuff, like Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday.
Jeez.
Saturday, he shows up. He does the stuff on Friday. Saturday, he shows up with a damn crock pot under his arm. And I'm like, what's that? He's like, oh, I just made some meatballs. So he brings a whole crock pot full of barbecue meatballs. And he's like, plug this in. We'll have it for lunch.
Holy shit, I'll never do this.
And see, it was
I'll
like,
this is why this audio medium sucks, because you had the same, your faces had the same reaction minded. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I mean, I love just, Chris. Don't get me wrong.
It was funny, man. He shows up with this food, and I'm like, dude, we feed you. That's the whole idea. He's like, that's all right.
The part.
We say thank you.
But the funny thing is he started like this, like arms race amongst the rest of the cast, right? And they're like,
are they bringing goodies?
Son of a bitch.
See,
and
now,
so people start
all of these ambitious first graders that he brought on now.
I brought lobster, everybody. Who likes lobster? Yeah.
Lobster Thermidor for everybody.
Well, even yesterday, I have to mention this one. So yesterday we were shooting.
This is good. I gotta meet these guys.
Okay, so Mandy Teets, who was in the Monster Family, like the musical, she was signed on as the female lead, and who's actually the lead character,
right,
in the movie. And we were filming yesterday out near her house in kind of the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. And she's like, no, don't worry. We'll come out to my house. We'll shoot around my house, and then I'll feed you guys. And it was like, we could bring stuff.
That's backwards, lady.
It's like, we could bring stuff. She's like, nope, no big deal, no big deal. So we get there, and she has all this stuff, like a big spread. She made this like giant pot of this really crazy good homemade soup. She's making these like ham and Swiss sliders. It was just, I was like, I don't think we're ever gonna feed you this well, but damn, this is awesome. Yeah. So I mean, and it was the perfect thing because it was super freaking cold. And I should encourage people, if you haven't watched it, to go to the Films of Christopher R. Mim and watch my dumb little video I took afterwards, because damn, it's cold.
There you go.
It was super cold and windy, and it was like the perfect thing to hit the spot right after. Just go eat a big ass bowl of chicken soup.
Yeah,
chicken and dumpling soup, homemade. It was so good. And this is the thing, is that. And maybe it's the theater thing,
it's the theater thing.
A lot of these people are theater actors first, and this is a lot of them. It's their first movie.
It's the culture. It's the support of the community.
It is.
I know.
Where you're right in particularly in these movies, but in movies like you're doing this for me, and so I'm giving you something. That's why we provide you beer.
Part of the expectation is we have craft services, right? For people to come in.
Craft services.
While you're doing us this favor, we're going to keep you alive.
So I guess I'm just going to say thanks, new people, for being so generous and making this such a cool, nice little atmosphere.
I'm so glad you have new people.
Making
me
the old
too.
People look
talking
bad.
About it for so the podcast. Long.
I know.
Only.
I can finally
Thank
get rid
you.
Of some of these old
so
bastards.
So before we get too far along, we gotta wrap this part one section up. But I just want to say I had a thought since last podcast. We talked about this very subject, about how people had been bringing in food.
Yes.
And but for the most part, all the filming for Demon with the Atomic Brain has all been just the new folks.
Yeah.
Yes.
It has none of the, let's say, established characters in the Mimiverse. Myself, Jim Norgard, there are other people involved. They have not shot their scenes yet. That doesn't happen yet for over another month.
Yeah, at least.
So Chris was telling us a story about all this food, and I'm like, he's just a couple weeks ago, actually, when we recorded the February podcast.
Yeah, we did that
on
right
Valentine's
at the last
Day.
Minute. Yeah, yeah.
So he was telling us about the meatball story, and so I was like, you know what? Forget
oh my God,
these guys.
It's the meatball story already.
I'm not going to do that.
That
I don't care.
Infamous.
I you know what? I'm going to show up. I'm going to be
I guess
excited.
As members of the old guard, you're not expected to, right?
No.
You're really supposed to come in and be like, "Where's my meatballs, motherfucker?"
Exactly.
I was promised meatballs.
Yeah.
No.
Meatballs, motherfucker. So, all right. So we'll wrap up part one, but in part two, we're going to talk about Dan's semi-retirement. We're going to talk about the Western that needs to be made.
Has to happen.
And we're going to talk about the potential of the Johnson brothers uniting. That would be Tyler and Dan Shervin. We're going to talk about these things in part two.
So poor man Shervin and poor man's Haynes.
Old man Shervin.
And the Logan story.
We'll talk passing about all this torch in part two. So you're going to want to listen.
You know what I start thinking? We could start doing a... Was it Wars of Days of Future Past?
No, boy.
He's the young Xavier. I'll be the... He's the one who says...